Good morning. This is Maggie Jones and Natural Wonders. We'll continue our trip with geologist George Fenshaw, who was hired to explore and report by the U.S. government. It's 1835. He's hired a crew of five French Canadians and travels with a fellow geologist whom he disliked and neglected to mention in his book. This essay is by Mike Mossman. It's published in the Wisconsin Society for Ornithology quarterly journal, The Passenger Pigeon. If you didn't hear the first part of this two-parter, I hope you'll look it up in the WDRT Archive podcasts and listen to last week's number 25. They set off on 22 August, paddling up the Lower Fox along the route to distant Prairie du Chien. We are now heading upriver on the Mississippi after 2 days spent in Prairie du Chien. It's early September, 1835. That night, apprehensive of the Sioux and Chippewa country that lay ahead, Fenshaw listened to barred owls around his campsite. Quote, "My people, the crew, who cared nothing about being in wet clothes, as soon as they had made their accustomed carnivorous meal and enjoyed their noisy conversation and their pipes, wrapped themselves up in their blankets and were soon all asleep, left whilst standing by my fire to the uninterrupted action of a busy imagination, I was struck by the apparently intelligent manner in which the owls and other night birds answered each other. Every now and then, an owl into the north, not more than perhaps 200 yards from the camp, would put his questions in a rather startling and distinct manner, and after a measured interval of time, the response, equally distinct, would be heard from the south, very near to me. I was very much interested in this. Everything connected with natural history is pleasing to me, and the effect was exceedingly increased by the locality, the adventurous life I was leading, and the hour of the night. But what more than anything else excited my imagination was the knowledge I possessed that the Indians are such exquisite mimics of natural sounds, and that one of their tricks when hovering about a camp is to imitate the cries of night birds, to lull their intended victims into confidence, and to communicate to each other their observations and intentions." Unquote. The next evening, as they landed north of La Crosse, one of the men knocked a large tetrao, certainly a sharptail, from a tree. The following morning, quote, "The rain began to come down in torrents again about 4 a.m., and peeping out of the tent, I saw all the people with their heads and bodies wrapped up in their blankets, profoundly asleep, and snoring as if nothing could awaken them. About 7 a.m., it cleared off again, and whilst they were striking the camp, the sergeant and Beaupré killed five large birds like the one of the preceding evening. These birds are as yet so unaccustomed to man that they sometimes permit themselves to be knocked from their roost." Unquote. Along the stretch of the river, now bordered by Buffalo County, the crew saw a flock of American white pelicans and, quote, "shot a great many wild pigeons, which, being fat, were a very acceptable addition to our larder." Unquote. These men were certainly very familiar with the passenger pigeon, which in the 1830s was probably among the most abundant birds in Wisconsin. Perhaps on this hunt, Fenshaw was reminded of his other experiences with this species, such as that described from the Arkansas Territory in his book Excursion Through the Slave States. Quote, "Flocks of them, many miles long, came across the country, one flight succeeding to another, obscuring the daylight, and in their swift motion creating a wind and producing a rushing and startling sound that cataracts of the first class might be proud of. These flights of wild pigeons constitute one of the most remarkable phenomena of the Western country. I remember once when amongst the Indians, seeing the woods loaded from top to bottom with their nests for a great number of miles, the heaviest branches of the trees broken and fallen to the ground, which was strewed with young birds dead and alive. a forest thus loaded and half destroyed with these birds presents an extraordinary spectacle which cannot be rivaled. But when such myriads of timid birds as the wild pigeon are on the wing, often wheeling and performing evolutions almost as complicated as pyrotechnic movements, and creating whirlwinds as they move, they present an image of the most fearful power. Our horse Missouri, at such times, had been so cowed by them that he would stand still and tremble in his harness, whilst we ourselves were glad when their flight was directed from us. Unquote. Fenshaw passed the mouth of the St. Croix River into present-day Minnesota on 10 September and returned downstream on 22 October. The next day, quote, "We suddenly came upon Lake Pepin, and the weather having improved into such a fine sunny morning, the spectacle which presented itself was as rare and beautiful as any I had seen the whole summer. Upon the smooth and glassy surface of the lake, hundreds upon hundreds of noble swans were floating with their cygnets, looking at a distance like boats under sail. The cygnets were still of a dull yellow color, and all the birds were very shy. It made a beautiful picture, and after contemplating it a while, we again plied our paddles." Unquote. These were probably tundra swans, which still migrate in numbers along this section of the Mississippi. Some may have been trumpeter swans, large migrations of which had perhaps by 1835 become a thing of the past on the Mississippi River. Approaching Dubuque on 30 October, the explorers left the Wisconsin wilderness. Quote, "Evidences of an advancing population increased upon us as we pursued our way. To my great regret, there was now an end to all the attractive simplicity and independence of the roving life I had been leading in the Indian country. I should soon be in the vortex of a white frontier population, must abandon my canoe, exchange the peaceful tent pitched on the clean bank of an interesting river for dirty accommodation at some filthy tavern, and make up my account to pay in money for every act of civility I might receive." Unquote. Fenshaw returned in May 1837 to journey overland through southwestern Wisconsin. This region west of Madison and south of the Wisconsin River contained nearly half the white population of the newly designated Wisconsin Territory and was growing rapidly with the continued influx of lead miners and speculators. But European immigration had not begun, and the land remained essentially unscathed by the axe and plow. Although Fenshaw's account of this trip is most fascinating for its sardonic descriptions of pioneer life, it does include a few references to nature. For example, he scared up, quote, "a great many fine tetrao," unquote, along the Pecatonica River near Mineral Point. Near Blue Mounds on 1 June, quote, "I rose at early dawn and took a walk on the prairie where plover were feeding in the freshness of the morning, and where I started several tetrao," unquote. These plover were apparently upland sandpipers, whereas the tetrao may have been either greater prairie chickens or sharp-tailed grouse. Fenshaw is eloquent in depicting the prairie and oak savanna in which these birds were found, for instance, between Blue Mounds and Madison. Quote, "We got into one of the most exquisitely beautiful regions I have ever been in any part of the world. The prairie that had hitherto westward been distinguished by a regular rolling surface here changed its character and took the form of ridges somewhat elevated, which frequently resolved themselves into masses of gracefully rounded hills separated by gentle depressions that occasionally became deepened valleys. In these, some of the heads of a stream called Sugar River, a tributary of Rock River, took their rise. In whatever direction our eyes were turned, the most pleasing irregularities of surface presented themselves, but that which crowned the perfection of the view and imparted an indescribable charm to the whole scene, from the knoll where we stood to the most distant point, where the alternate hills and vales blended with the horizon, was the inimitable grace with which the picturesque clumps of trees that sometimes enlarged themselves into woods embellished this rural landscape from the hand of nature. America will justly boast of this unrivaled spectacle when it becomes known, for certainly it is formed of elements that no magic could enable all Europe to bring together upon so great a scale. Every moment produced a new excitement, the occasional glimpse of the shy deer with their elegant fawns, and the more frequent flushing of the prairie hen from her nest gave animation to the still beauty around us, unquote. Like other historical accounts, a canoe voyage up the Minnesotor is more evocative than thorough in its description of early Wisconsin wildlife, yet these various sources together provide an historic perspective essential to understanding today's wildlife populations and the changes they continue to undergo. They illustrate the adaptability of species such as cliff swallows, which has disappeared from many cliff sites such as those near the Shot Tower since settlement, but now nests commonly beneath highway bridges that span the nearby Wisconsin. At the same time, they attest to the subsequent loss of species such as the passenger pigeon, the severe fragmentation of our prairie grouse populations, or the decline of wetlands such as those at Lakes Puckaway, Buffalo, and Butte des Moines, as a result of ditching, shoreline development, inundation from artificial dams, and the introduction of carp. Yet while moving us to lament such losses, the words of ornithologists past can also help reveal the potentialities of this Wisconsin land and impel restoration efforts. And by reading the experiences and feelings of observers long ago, we enrich our own encounters with the same places and creatures, and may even hear, as did a wet and uneasy Englishman 150 years ago, Indian voices in the calls of a Mississippi River owl. And that's Mike Mossman's wonderful essay, A Tory in the Wisconsin Wilderness. This is Maggie Jones and Natural Wonders. Thank you for listening.